I wish we would have pulled over a little bit more so that when we met in the middle would have been different than what it is today.
Dissatisfied with the budget compromise, a Mat-Su Republican leaves the Senate majority. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, June 27. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Alaska will receive millions in federal funds to offset money lost from tax-exempt land.
There's large swaths of highway that there's no residents that live in, but emergency services have to be provided.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Wells Fargo, with over 13,000 ATMs and more than 6,000 branches coast to coast. For a branch location near you, visit wellsfargo.com.
Alaska Pacific University offers graduate programs that deliver a distinctive education, grounded in real-world experience with life-friendly schedules to support personal goals. Apply now at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by APU.
For the second time this year, a Republican from the Matanuska-Susitna Borough left the state Senate Majority Caucus. Palmer Senator Shelley Hughes left the caucus last week to oppose the state budget. Hughes was the only senator to vote against the more than $4 billion operating budget. She says she wished the majority had pushed for deeper budget cuts before it compromised with the House.
I wish we would have pulled over a little bit more so that when we met in the middle would have been different than what it is today.
Since the majority requires its members to vote for the budget, Hughes' decision to vote no essentially meant she left the caucus. Hughes opposed cutting permanent fund dividends. Due to the budget gap, Hughes says she would first support further spending cuts, then she would support a statewide sales tax.
People in my district, they just want to see more reductions first. And so I have to honor that. And that is how I campaigned. And I have to be a person of my word.
Hughes will lose some of her four committee assignments, including her spot on the powerful Finance Committee. She will also lose funding for legislative aides. Hughes joined Wasilla Republican Senator Mike Dunleavy in leaving the majority. Dunleavy says he understood why Hughes made her decision. He says it's difficult for senators to balance their own positions with the caucus's needs.
I think that's a problem for many folks still in the caucus. There's a lot of good folks. I mean, they're all good folks. But in terms of thinking on your own and making your decision on your own, that generally goes against the whole caucus concept.
Dunleavy says he also would have voted against the budget. Dunleavy adds he'll talk with Hughes about forming a new two-person caucus. U.S. Senate leaders postponed a vote on their health care reform bill, but Alaskans opposed to the bill aren't letting up. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin met with one Alaskan, a three-time cancer survivor, who was at the U.S. Capitol today to tell his senators to reject the bill.
Steve Taylor is 42 and looks solid and strong. You wouldn't pick him out as a person who requires expensive health care. He works at a title company and lives in Anchorage with his wife, a dog, and two cats. He likes to fly fish. Until 2004, he was fine.
I was in great health. I hadn't been to an actual doctor in years.
2 months after his wedding day, he was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma and went through chemo. A few years after that, pancreatic cancer.
They ended up taking the head of my pancreas, my gallbladder, a portion of my small intestine, and half my stomach.
Then came melanoma. He learned it's all related to a genetic disorder. Now he has to have monthly injections that cost $10,000 apiece. Like a majority of Alaskans, Taylor has insurance through his employer. He's glad the Affordable Care Act of 2010 eliminated lifetime caps on insurance payouts. A lot of them were set at $1 million.
Obviously, since that period of time, have blown by the former caps.
Taylor was one of 60 patients brought to Washington by a coalition of more than a dozen patient groups, including the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. They're trying to make the issue personal by putting patients face-to-face with their senators. As they were making the rounds, word filtered through the Capitol that Republican leaders didn't have the votes for the bill and will put it off until after the July 4 recess. Taylor was eager to tell both Alaskan senators to ditch the bill and start from scratch. because he says the proposal is bad for cancer patients.
Not just cancer patients, diabetes, anybody that has any type of chronic illness or anybody that is going to have a catastrophic illness, they deserve to be protected.
Among his complaints, the bill could allow states to waive the ban on lifetime caps, and he says there would be financial pressure to bring them back. Neither Senator Dan Sullivan nor Senator Lisa Murkowski has announced a position on the bill.
How am I feeling about it?
Do you feel like you might support it?
I feel like I still have a lot of hard questions that require a lot of hard data.
Healthcare for everyone!
In Alaska, a group of protesters was outside the senator's Anchorage office building at lunchtime to demonstrate against the Senate bill. Ex-insurance agent Michael Derisson says speaking out makes a point to the senators.
Well, I think their eyes will open up a little more and they'll understand that people are on top of this issue. And they'll think more about it before they pass any bill that's sponsored by their party.
At the same time, both Alaska senators were with their Republican colleagues at the White House to regroup on health care. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says he expects to put a revised bill on the floor in a few weeks. With help from Henry Leisha in Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin in Washington.
The Department of Interior announced yesterday that Alaska would receive nearly $30 million in payment in lieu of taxes, or PILT. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early has more.
PILT funding is determined by Congress and provides local governments with funding they can't get from tax-exempt federal lands within their boundaries. It pays for services in communities containing national parks, national forests, and other public lands.
Because there are impacts from people coming to visit those federal lands for recreation, for fishing, for hiking, whatever, there are costs associated with maintaining roads, public safety. It's tax-exempt, but there are costs associated for local governments and state governments to pay some of the costs of services, and that's what a payment in lieu of tax is for. So it's very important.
Mike Navarre is the mayor of the Kenai Peninsula Borough. Alaska's 18 organized boroughs will each get a check from the federal government. Navarre's borough and the Mat-Su borough will receive the largest funding amounts, with both getting more than $3 million each from the federal government. However, Alaska also has vast tracts of land not in organized boroughs, according to Kathy Wasserman with the Alaska Municipal League. This land, known as the state's unorganized borough, will also see money from the PILT payments, but it won't be in the form of one payment since there's no borough government to receive it.
So those 18 boroughs will each get a check, and then the state gets a big one for all the geographical land that is in the unorganized borough, and they send it out to every organized municipality within the unorganized borough, which there are, 164 minus 18. So
146 municipalities will split a large check from the state. Navarre says that certain capital projects in his borough wouldn't get funded without assistance from PILT funds.
We've just set up a highway service area corridor for emergency services, and it's going to be paid for in part with payment in lieu of taxes. And the reason it's important is it's a whole corridor from almost Hope all the way down to Sterling and into Moose Pass. Those are the highways where there's a lot of federal lands adjacent to it, where there's large swaths of highway that there's no residents that live in, but emergency services have to be provided or should be provided.
The almost $30 million Alaska will receive is part of a record $464.6 million that will be distributed to 1,900 local governments in the country this year. President Donald Trump, in his budget proposal, proposed a 12% cut to PILT funding for next year. Navarre says that with reductions in PILT funding, the budget gap would end up falling on state residents to fill.
Having that land be tax exempt means that the other taxpayers on taxable lands and taxable properties have to pay for those costs of services. So it's important that we, I guess, continue to make that case to the federal government.
Taxpayers in areas near federal lands, particularly western states, will have to wait for Congress to pass a federal budget before they know how much they'll receive in next year's PILT payments. In Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
A 14-minute eruption by an Alaska volcano sent an ash cloud to 30,000 feet in the Aleutian Islands. The Alaska Volcano Observatory says Bogoslaw volcano erupted at 3:17 a.m. An ash cloud was not immediately visually confirmed, but the Worldwide Lightning Location Network detected lightning strikes within the volcanic cloud. Bogoslav has erupted periodically since mid-December. The volcano is 850 miles southwest of Anchorage. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Anchorage parking officials are looking to transform the downtown transit center.
Building that's been around for 30 years has gained a reputation and to some degree a stigma.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska Job Corps Center offers training to people 16 to 24 years old interested in completing their education or starting a career and who meet income eligibility. On-the-job experience is provided in training programs from office administration to water and wastewater treatment. Tweet hashtag CareersBeginHere to learn more. This message is sponsored by Alaska Job Corps Center, Chugach Education Services, Inc.
Anchorage is trying to figure out what's next for the downtown transit center. The facility was a central hub for city buses, but problems with loitering, substance abuse, and crime created what some call a hazard to health and safety. As Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes reports, officials are reaching out to developers and the business community to reinvent the property.
It's a relatively quiet morning inside the transit center. People read or chit-chat on benches as noisy buses drop passengers off. A small group of city employees, developers, and business owners stand around a man wearing a slim blazer with a neatly folded white pocket square.
Did you want to take a tour or any questions?
Upstairs.
Okay, great. Come on.
Andrew Halcrow is the executive director of the Anchorage Community Development Authority. ACDA is a quasi-governmental appendage attached to the municipal body. It controls all the city's parking facilities, including meters, some surface lots, and a few big parking garages, like the one attached to the transit center. Under Halcrow, the ACDA has tried to get creative with parking and transit resources, treating them less like infrastructure and more like real estate.
As you see, a year ago there was 12 tenants in here, now there's only one.
In 2015, when ACDA announced plans to, quote, shut and gut the transit center, it began phasing out the businesses and social service providers that rented space in the building. All that's left now is Burger Express, and of course, the buses. But even those are going away. Over the next couple months, the city is overhauling its bus system, and new routes are designed in a way where the transit center will be less like a bus station and more like just a hub. So the city is reaching out to private partners, trying to get their ideas and proposals for what to do with the space.
So we're really trying to get the building to a point where developers such as yourselves can come in and take a look at the facility and envision what it could be. Because obviously a building that's been around for 30 years has gained a reputation and to some degree a stigma.
There, Halcrow's referring to the transit center's terrible reputation, which many blame for deterring nearby development and investment. When Mayor Ethan Berkowitz's administration announced the news it would be gradually shuttering the facility, among its most frequently cited reasons were widespread public intoxication, drug dealing, and sex crimes. In the broader ambition of revamping downtown Anchorage, Halcrow sees the transit center overhaul as the first move in a domino sequence that could get nearby parking lots and substandard buildings turned into apartments and businesses.
We've spent a lot of time talking with economic development agencies outside, especially in Oklahoma City and Wichita. Garages are being redeveloped in a lot of urban centers because traditionally in urban centers, garages occupy prime real estate. So they're doing all kinds of creative things with putting housing on the facade or mixed use, those kinds of things. And so those are the kinds of ideas we're looking for.
Halcrow doesn't mean converting the parking garage into condos. The towering structure would stay the same, along with its capacity to store several hundred vehicles. His general idea is affixing a new building beside the garage, one with around five dozen housing units above one or two floors of retail shops. Adding housing stock downtown is a growing goal for the Berkowitz administration, and something that national chains like Walgreens have said they'd need to see in the area in order to consider opening franchise locations. Achilles Gagnon is one of the business people on the tour. He runs a company that rehabs building interiors.
We design and tear down and put
put up new Legos.
Gagnon says the idea of potentially affixing new shops and residential units to a parking garage is an interesting proposition. He came on this optional tour as he and some business partners are designing a proposal to submit to the city.
We'll see who we can team up with and maybe hopefully be on the winning team to do something in here. I think it'd be great.
Any potential redevelopment plan will likely have to involve multiple partners working closely with the municipality. Halcrow expects proposals to be submitted and vetted during the summer and potentially have a clear vision for what happens to the transit center by October. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
During visits to the lower 48, Alaskans may have caught a ride in an Uber or Lyft car. Now people around the state can use the ride-hailing companies at home. This month, Alaska became the last state to make way for the transportation apps. In small towns where taxi service has struggled to survive, the companies could fill a need. KHNS's Emily Files has more from Haines.
It's a 16-foot dark blue Super Duty F-350.
If you're catching an Uber in New York or L.A., you might expect a sleek black sedan. But Haines resident and aspiring Uber driver Alex Stock has a Ford Super Duty truck.
It's Alaska. What do you expect, you know? That's the greatest part about it.
Alaska Governor Bill Walker gave ride-sharing companies like Uber and Lyft the green light to operate in the state earlier this month. He signed into law House Bill 132, which permits transportation network companies in the state. Uber did operate in Alaska for a short time a few years ago, but it shut down after a dispute over labor rules. Uber and Lyft services are based on a smartphone app that connects passengers and drivers. Drivers are considered independent contractors, and they use their own cars. For now, Lyft is only in Juneau, Anchorage, and Fairbanks, but Uber says it should be available wherever there are interested drivers.
I'm going to sign up and see how it goes. You know, I mean, I think it's a good way to supplement my income.
Stock runs a scooter rental business that caters to cruise ship tourists. He's getting involved in Uber for the same reason he started the scooter business. Haines has no taxi service or public transportation.
That was probably the biggest concern I started hearing from tourists. I said, well, you can rent a scooter from me, you know. Other than that, I don't really have an answer for you. Now this seems to be the answer.
If Uber would be able to provide the same level of service that a taxi cab company could provide or better, then I certainly would encourage the community to go that route.
Deborah Schnabel is Haines Borough Manager. She says taxi companies haven't lasted here because of the high cost of insurance required for commercial vehicles under borough code. But it doesn't look like Uber drivers will have that burden.
The authority to regulate transportation network companies and transportation network drivers is reserved to the state.
That's Schnabel reading from HB 132. The law essentially disallows local governments from imposing regulations on ride-sharing companies. Municipalities can levy a sales tax, but if they want to go beyond that, the law requires a public vote. Alaska Municipal League Director Kathy Wasserman is frustrated by the lack of local control.
The legislature, for whatever reason, promised an out-of-state company that, oh yeah, if you don't want regulation in order to come to our state, okay, we'll exempt you. Well, I mean, what does that say to every other business in this state? I mean, that just seems crazy.
The city of Juneau was also opposed to the bill's limited options for local regulation. But there are still some restrictions. Not just anyone can drive for Uber or Lyft. Prospective drivers must pass a federal background check, which screens for driving and criminal history. They have to be 21 or over. And cars cannot be more than 12 years old, and they must undergo an inspection. Soon-to-be Uber driver Stock is still waiting on the background check. He downloaded the vehicle inspection form, which he'll take to a local mechanic. He hopes to be driving for Uber by the end of the week.
So do you have any plans of how to be the five-star Uber driver? Are you going to carry mints? Are you going to play some atmospheric music?
Yeah, that'd be nice. I think the people will just be happy to get out to their destination, and I will do it in a calm and courteous manner. And maybe, you know, wash the truck. I think that's probably the best idea. You know?
I'm Emily Files, reporting from Haines.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com. And by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Residents of Utqiagvik have experienced above normal temperatures for the last 17 months. But a cooler than normal June will end that streak. Brian Bretschneider with our Ask a Climatologist segment says the rest of the state has drifted back toward normal temperatures this year after spending several years in above normal territory. But he told editor Annie Feit Utqiagvik stayed warm until this month.
They're going to break their 17-month string of above normal months and end up just probably about 1 degree below normal. So for them, they get to experience what the rest of the state has so far in 2017.
How significant was that streak?
Well, 17 months, I mean, that's a long streak. I believe that's the currently longest streak in the United States. There's a few places in, say, Minnesota and in the southeastern lower 48 that are running about 12 months in a row above normal. But 17 is a long time. It's quite the statistical anomaly to be that above normal for that many months in a row. So it's very noteworthy.
What about the rest of the state this summer? How are temperatures shaping up?
Well, so June, you know, we consider June the first traditional month of the summer. And we have this, you know, at both extremes of the state. On the north slope, they're a little bit below normal. And then down in southeast from Juneau southward, a little bit below normal. And then everyone else is at or slightly above normal. So Anchorage is about half a degree above normal. Fairbanks, Bethel, McGrath, about 2 degrees above normal. And then over on the west coast, Nome, Kotzebue, about 5 degrees above normal. So even though in some respects it's kind of felt like a cool start to the summer, we're actually running a little bit above normal.
I think people in Anchorage will say you're crazy to suggest we're having even a little bit warmer than normal summer.
Well, we oftentimes think of, say, 70-degree days here in Anchorage. So we've only had two so far. And normally we'd have about five. And for the whole summer, we'd have about 15 or 16. So sometimes people, they look at those warm events, those outlier events, and say, you know, that's their metric of, has it been an above normal temperature summer or below normal? So you can actually run above normal even without having your requisite number of so-called warm days.
Well, yeah, explain how the average daily temperature is calculated.
So when we talk about it's been, you know, X degrees above or below normal, we're not talking just about the high temperature. So you add the high and the low together and divide by two. And, you know, from a climate point of view and then for all the applications, you know, from an ecological point of view, it's that average daily temperature that really matters. So you can run, say, you know, in Anchorage, our normal high is about 65. This time of year, you can actually have a 65-degree high temperature and that same day be 1 or 2 degrees above normal because you haven't looked at the low temperature yet. And if that's running 1 or 2 or 4 degrees above normal, then the whole day will run above normal. So over the long term, we've actually seen more of an increase in our low temperatures than we have in the high temperatures during the summer months. So don't just keep an eye on the high temperature. You also have to look at the low temperature to see how we're doing from a climate perspective.
Brian Bretschneider is a climatologist who lives in Anchorage. He spoke with Annie Feit from Alaska's Energy Desk as part of a regular look at climate change in the state. If you have a climate-related question, send an email to akenergydesk@alaskapublic.org. A new bronze sculpture of Iditarod co-founder Joe Reddington Sr. was unveiled at Reddington High School in Kinnick on Friday. The ribbon-cutting ceremony was held the day before signups for the 2018 Iditarod race. Alaska Public Media's Henry Leisha has more.
Representatives from the Iditarod Trail Committee, assembly members from the Mattsu Borough, and the Reddington family hold pieces of red ribbon in one hand and giant novelty scissors in the other. Behind them looms a bronze statue of a tireless dog team and their tenacious musher. Patrick Garley, a bronze sculptor from Palmer, spent about a year and a half making this life-size sculpture of Joe Reddington Sr. and his seven-dog team. Reddington, a dog musher who ran a kennel in Kinnick, co-founded the Iditarod with Dorothy Page. The sculpture was made possible through Alaska's Percent for Art program, which sets aside 1% of the construction costs for new or renovated public buildings for site-specific artwork. This isn't the first time that Garley has sculpted the father of the Iditarod. Last year, Garley created a new Joe Reddington Sr. trophy for the winner of the Iditarod. He says the most difficult part about these sculptures is capturing the dogs.
People here really know their dogs, so they're going to expect they will spot any inconsistencies.
Saturday marked 18 years since Reddington passed away. Iditarod CEO Stan Hooley says he hopes this statue will cement Reddington's legacy for the next generation.
But more importantly, I'm hopeful they will develop enough of an understanding of his life and that they make a connection with his undying spirit and his ability to pursue a dream, even when others had a lot of doubt.
During the ceremony, Mat-Su Borough Mayor Vern Halter presented a $25,000 check from the borough to the Iditarod Trail Committee. Hooley says the funding will provide crucial resources for trail maintenance.
We create a trail every year, and some of the underbrush has grown to a point where it's impossible when you don't get 6 feet of snow to lay it down adequately enough to go over the top of it.
Two out of the last 3 years, the Iditarod has moved the restart to Fairbanks from its traditional location in Willow due to a lack of snow. Mayor Halter says he hopes this funding could help keep the Iditarod in the Mat-Su Valley.
The thinking was if they could get some of this brush and tough stuff out, even in smaller, lower snow years, we could restart the race in the valley, in the borough. And that's a big deal for us, you know, not only because of the history of Joe Sr. in the race, but for businesses. You know, we have a lot of lodges and a lot of things revolve around the Iditarod.
Several members of the Reddington family were at the ceremony. The founder's great-granddaughter, Ellen Reddington, will be attending the high school in the fall. She will be the first family member to enroll in the school. Three of Joe Reddington Sr.'s grandchildren, Robert, Ryan, and Ray, were among the 52 mushers that signed up for the 2018 Iditarod over the weekend. Registration for the race closes December 1st. For Alaska Public Media, I'm Henry Leisha.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Emily Files in Haines, and Annie Feit, Henry Leisha, and Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. Sean Dugan is our producer and editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. The University of Alaska Southeast offers the Finnish College Alaska initiative, designed with flexible online learning options and customized degree programs. It's college that fits life, work, and play schedules while earning a degree. UAS is now offering a 3-credit tuition waiver for eligible applicants. Apply for the fall semester by Tuesday, August the 1st. Learn more at finnishcollege.alaska.edu. This message is sponsored by UAS. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.